Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Matt Kimmel and Charlie Spears to go through this week's Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining news. It's halving week, so lots to talk about. We'll dive into it in just a moment. Before we get there, we want to thank our sponsors, CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin Miner, and Forman Mining, Master Mining. You'll hear a little bit more from both these sponsors in just a moment. Okay, before we get there, last shout out for the Denver Bitcoin Halving Party. It's on Saturday at the Independence Institute from 2 to 8 p.m. We have a full itinerary, 6 hours of Bitcoin conversations, talks, brews, food, and more. So be sure to join us if you are in the Rocky Mountain region. Okay, let's jump right into the show.
Hey, listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Forman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Forman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Forman, you get a system that scales with your business, inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Forman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Forman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit Forman.mn. With Forman, you're not just managing a mining operation, you're setting a new standard in the industry.
Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
Welcome back to the Mining Pod. This is the news roundup portion, but it's a special episode because we got the Bitcoin halving this evening. We're recording this Thursday afternoon, but the show is coming out Friday morning. So if you're listening to this, tonight is the Bitcoin halving. We're expecting it, I think, around like 11 p.m. Eastern. It might move a little bit, but we're going to go through this, that, and the other thing relating to the Bitcoin halving, Bitcoin news, and Bitcoin mining news. So much has happened this week. We're going to get into it live, of course, joined by Matt Kimmel of CoinShares and Charlie Spears of Blockspace Media. Welcome, gents, to the show. We'll first start off with some Bitcoin halving data from our friends at MinerMag. Matt, I'll throw it to you first. Let's go through a few of these things. The first one I wanted to look at was just general hash price. And if you could walk out what hash price means, what are miners looking at from like a revenue perspective after tomorrow?
Yeah, this is dollars per petahash second per day. And so basically you look at, on a large scale, right, mining revenue, how many coins are actually being made available to miners each block, which is a culmination of the actual issuance, right, which is soon to drop from or be cut in half from 6.25, and then transaction fees. And then to put it into dollar terms, you multiply by the Bitcoin price. And so we've seen it kind of chop and vary a bit because of the transaction fee environment. But of course, this is going to drop when the halving actually hits because the issuance will be cut in half. And so we'll come to see which miners are prepared for that, which miners may struggle a little bit.
Charlie, you're mining Bitcoin. What are you thinking about? What are you fearful about tomorrow?
I'm not fearful about tomorrow. I'm fearful about this summer. Like, I remember with like some PTSD summer 2020, where it was not profitable. S9s were selling for scrap metal. And as much as I am like the ordinals and runes bull in the room, like, that is only 4 years ago and I have a long memory. So Bitcoin price, please go up. Transaction fees, please go up. I'm tired of the stressed miner economics. I'm ready for the bull market.
Love it. Okay. Of course, what's happening here is the number of Bitcoin issued in the Coinbase reward is decreasing by 50%. We have transaction fees that are higher than previously. You know, they used to be around 1% to 2% of total rewards for Bitcoin miners. Now they're probably closer to around 10%. So we have another chart here from our friends at the Miner Mag, Bitcoin monthly transaction fees versus total block rewards. And you see like a nice uptick, especially in November of 2023, where there was like another wave of ordinals interest. To the ordinals point, Charlie, what are you expecting with the Runes launch, with increased interest in inscriptions over the next 2 weeks? My personal theory, and I think this probably is based mostly on conversations with you, so maybe kind of stealing some of your thunder here, is we'll have like 2 weeks of flash in the pan interest from a lot of degens. Bitcoin miners will clean up, and then some exhaustion will set into reality that, you know, we're past 2024 having.
100%. It's going to be this massive burst in mania right out the gate. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it, you know, how long it'll last, but you know, we know how degens operate. It's a cyclical hype game. So whether it's 2 weeks or 2 months, it will ebb and flow. I think the question is, do each of these new mania events, do they spawn future ones? Do they resurrect themselves as ordinals did multiple times this past year and continue to drive activity and transaction fees? I'm going to bet yes, but you never know till you see it.
Okay, last chart I want to bring up from Miner Mag is this pool distribution from 2020 versus 2024. And it's always fascinating to me to look at like, what does the pool game look like in terms of who are still operating these pools? Pools are extremely competitive. Bitcoin mining is competitive, but try operating the pool game. Pools go under all the time. And we're still around the same. If you look at the pie charts here, if you're just listening to the audio version of the show, pie charts look very similar. Different players. F2 pool's a little smaller. Poolin is not even on the picture anymore. But Amp pool's still there. BTC.com is still there. The emergence of Foundry is probably the most notable thing on this chart. Matt, to you. And we're going to get more into pools in a little bit later in the show as well.
Yeah, historically, pools have been at these levels, even higher than these levels. So from a distribution standpoint, it's nothing that's concerning to me from like a centralization point of view. That being said, that chart definitely shows to me the impact of the China mining ban, right? And its kind of long-standing effects. There's one thing I want to bring up that you on the kind of last segment about fees, just because I ran some numbers earlier. So I'm going to throw out a data point to you. A lot of miners are apprehensive, right, about the mining because it cuts production. But the inscription demand that was at the end of the year last year, November, December, the average daily fees that that caused hit a such level that would, if it repeats after the halving, would recoup about 40% of the halving's impact. That's how much revenue would be coming from fees. So there is cause for hope, you know, and even if it is a flash in the pan, if runes, collectibles, maybe MEV, I don't know, if there's kind of these unusual demand vectors for block space, it could actually help miners quite a bit. The mining economics could be bumped by transaction fees. Could be short-lived, but we'll find out.
You want to give a little plug for where you got that data from?
I just wrote a little paper. It's up on CoinShares blog, and data from Dune, from Glassnode, from Sotheby's, from all over the place. So check it out.
Okay, we'll put a link to that report in the show notes. So if you are into Bitcoin mining data,
go check out his new report. We'll also put that in the newsletter as well. So if you're subscribed to the Blockspace newsletter, you can check out Matt's new report. Okay, before we jump past happening stuff, and we are kind of speed running it because there's so much to talk about in today's show, let's look at this new report from Thane Field Research. Our friend Kareem Helmy put this nice research report together on what is the impact from the Bitcoin halving and what is the impact from Bitcoin miners really selling. What's the bullish case and what's the bearish case? We'll also put this in research notes or in our notes below and on the newsletter as well. I'd say like the synthesis of all this together is that miners are generally not selling that much Bitcoin month over month. According to this data that Kareem kind of backed out based on network figures, miners are adding about 28 million in sell pressure per month for Bitcoin. But they're bringing in, I think we said like $65 million plus per day just from all the money. So I think that we can look at this data and point to it and say, there's not that much sell pressure from Bitcoin miners. It's often overstated. He also did a nice little figure where he looked at the public numbers from Bitcoin miners and compared that against the global network hash rate averages and backed out a little bit what we can expect post-halving for how many Bitcoin miners are going to be around, based on the information we have from Publix. I don't know if Charlie or Matt, you had time to review this, but any thoughts in general on like the bullish or bearish case for Bitcoin mining coming out of the halving from like a miner sell pressure standpoint?
I don't know if it's like changed that much at all. I feel like we've seen this a bunch, and I don't really expect miner sell pressure to meaningfully affect Bitcoin. This is a narrative that if you've been in it, you hear you can tell that somebody's first time like thinking about Bitcoin mining, if they're concerned about miner sell pressure, because after years or a couple cycles, you're like, oh, you compare it to the other sell volume across the board. You look at, you know, at the correlation, you see what's happening in the market, and it really doesn't seem to drive that much. I think miner sell pressure will continue to have decreasing effects year on year, epoch on epoch.
Love it. Okay, we can put that news story away. And let's go over to Riot in Corsicana. We'll pull up this video from them here on their Twitter page. But Riot energized their Corsicana site, which is a pretty big achievement. It's a 1 gigawatt site.
Look at that substation.
Yeah, this is going to be the largest Bitcoin mine in North America, about 1 gigawatt in size. Their current one is the largest as well, and it's around 750 megawatts. I don't believe it's like fully energized. Like there's a few spots that are not. But I think in terms of like allocation, it's the largest filled as of now. But yeah, this is a huge site. Corsicana, Texas. They've been working on this for over 2 years. So congrats to the Riot team for getting this done. There's more hash rate in Texas. Yeah, Matt, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, Bitcoin is a software project that ends up having major real life infrastructural projects. And that's what this is evidence of. Neat to see, especially in my home state. Exciting stuff.
I saw a really interesting tweet thread from one of the UT Austin Energy guys talking about like Bitcoin mining coming online over the next year in Texas. And, you know, this is a significant amount of it. Like 1 gigawatt is huge. I think Texas right now, in terms of generation, has about 85 to 100 gigawatts of capability. Just you can like ramp that up and down depending on like if the sun is shining or if like the wind is blowing, things like that. But, you know, 1 gigawatt site is 1% of their grid once that's fully up and running. Now, it seems like Texas is building generation at like an increasingly fast pace. I don't remember the number, what it was, but it was like a double digit number in terms of gigawatts they're going to bring to Texas over the near term. So a lot of energy is still in Texas. I think that the rush to Texas has sort of been completed, and this maybe 1 gigawatt site is probably like the capstone for it or like the largest achievement, but they're certainly building a lot more generation. And I could be wrong on that. Charlie, you're seeing a lot of build out in Oklahoma, right? So what are you seeing from your purview in Bitcoin mining?
We have multiple, I would classify them as mega mines being built in Oklahoma. The one of note, which is public, is Polaris, and they've energized 200 megawatts, and that's supposed to expand to 600 megawatts by the end of this year. So Riot,
wow.
Build faster. That's happening 2 hours, that's happening an hour and a half south of me, right as we speak. So I'm on the board of the Oklahoma Bitcoin Association, and we're doing some preliminary research on this. It is looking like Bitcoin mining may be either top three, if not the number one consumer of energy in the state within the next year or so. That's crazy for a for an industry that was that is not even on the map of the legislators. So it's hard for people to grasp the magnitude of this business. And I think it's just getting started still.
More protection for your sats, folks. More protection for your sats.
More competition for my rigs.
In the competitive world of Bitcoin mining, one name stands out: CleanSpark, America's Bitcoin miner. At CleanSpark, efficiency isn't just a goal, it's our standard. Our sophisticated facilities are built and led by expert teams who care about Bitcoin and the communities we work in. Scale, we've mastered it. Our large-scale operations have set us apart in the industry as examples of community-oriented building. Our track record speaks for itself. We navigate the complexities of the new economy with precision and with skill, continuously achieving operational milestones. Curious about how we do it? We invite you to discover the story behind CleanSpark's success at cleanspark.com.
Okay, let's put that topic aside and move over to my tweet. 2 weeks in a row where I've talked about tweets from myself. A little self-interested.
Eating your own dog food is what we call it.
Yeah, I kind of am here. So big news in terms of like the integration of Bitcoin mining and ordinals, and that is a foundry pool, the largest pool globally and by hash rate. And then did Ant pool surpass them? Like, where's that at right now? Like kind of neck and neck.
They peaked their heads over Foundry a couple times, but they're now back down to like 25. Foundry's about 30 again.
Okay. Okay. That's what I thought, but live correction on air if wrong. Regardless, Foundry Pool sent out this notice to its clients yesterday via email, where you're able to leak it and put it onto the Twitter account and the classic breaking Twitter handle. So that did happen. Sorry for the cringe. But essentially what happened here is Foundry let all its clients know, these Bitcoin miners who send hash rate its way, that if they do mine the halving block, that they will separate the quote-unquote rare sat from the top of that block and then auction it off, or as they say, monetize it and distribute all the profits from that rare sat to all of their clients. And so why did they do this? Well, there's a lot of speculation about this rare sat and the value for it. Charlie put a great piece together in the Blockspace newsletter a few weeks ago about like what this sat could be worth. And there's numbers as high as 5 million. It's kind of just speculation. I've even heard higher numbers. Who knows? People want this rare sat, and miners are the ones, obviously, who will be able to get it because they are mining the block that comes with the rare sat. So who wants this? My understanding is people who want to launch ordinals projects. Like, if you are able to inscribe on that rare sat, the halving sat, your inscription project, it could have a significant premium over different projects. So Charlie, I will throw that to you to kind of unwind everything there.
Yeah, some more color to it. This isn't just a rare sat. It is the epic sat, the epic Satoshi, which only comes about every halving. So there are only three epic Satoshis. This is the fourth. Ordinal theorists have confirmed that one of the epic sats is probably lost forever. The two others, we don't know where they are. But this means that, you know, all the people who want to collect and do things on ordinals are now have their eyes set on this. If you look at the overall $1 billion plus market capitalization of all these ordinals and inscriptions, then it doesn't sound that crazy to take one of the most desirable Satoshis to launch an ordinals collection if that's what they're doing. I think it's notable that we have pool buy-in because Foundry is kind of the big holdout from all the different pools of actually even talking about this. Like, you have to create the rules to separate out the first 546 sats out of Coinbase. So like, it's big. And then they're actually going beyond that. This is a first. They're the first pool to like actually publicly state we will pass on the revenues, if we get them, to our pool contributors. That's the first time we've seen that. I think that's significant.
It also puts a lot of pressure on the other pools, right? So like Foundry's not the only game in town. Antpool has its significant share, its significant hash rate value, but it has connections to all these other pools. And we talked about that last week, where we saw like the Coinbase end payouts, where all the these Bitcoins are flowing, is to an entity called Kobo that is custodying and often liquidating Bitcoin on behalf of these different Bitcoin mining pools. And they all sort of float back to Antpool. And there was another tweet this week talking about how a lot of these Bitcoin mining pools are using the Antpool block template. So there's even more indications from just public available data on Bitcoin that Antpool has, you know, 50% plus of hash rate in some sort of terms. Now, it doesn't mean directly, no, but it does have some sort of direction here, which brings us to a great tweet from Steve Barber. He was on the show a few weeks ago. He's of Upstream Data. Quote, Antpool owns approximately 50% or more of the network hash rate. I wouldn't put it past them to steal the halving block. Essentially, there is, you know, are they going to reorg the tip of the chain, try to claim that halving block, and whatever excess value you can get from auctioning off that rare sat to whoever the highest bidder is?
I think it's important to note, if you're a listener of the show and you're like, well, why has this not been known before? Well, if we look at like how pool shares are calculated, like as percent of the network, it's mostly voluntary reporting. So if you look at the methodology for how we know that Foundry is 30% of the network, that's a self-reported figure. A lot of this is like very hard to verify empirically. So it's up in the air what the current actual landscape of pools looks like.
Matt.
There's so many things to talk about than what you guys just
We're giving you a start. You go wherever you want with that one.
I feel like speaking to like the story that we talked about a bit ago, what Charlie said about there being a kind of precedent set by Foundry to share excess rewards with those that are mining with them could be a potentially really important one, especially as more sort of Bitcoin plug-in technologies decide to settle on the main chain. There could be different kind of merge mining schemes, other kind of added incentives for mining pools to extract value. And for them to come out and say and recognize, one, it gives some legitimacy to the Ordinals crowd, right? As they're like, yes, we acknowledge this epic sat. We do think it will sell for a valuable enough amount that we feel inclined to share that revenue with you, our miners. But it also kind of communicates to them that, hey, if we are going to extract revenue from kind of outside means, that we are willing to share that with you. And that, and to your point, that also communicates will to the competition that says, hey, maybe come over here instead of going with who you're currently with, because we're going to give you added rewards. So it's just another kind of gem to grab onto, that the landscape is changing in mining economics and pools and miners themselves. And that like the time we are in right now is very critical and setting a lot of precedent for the future.
There's a bunch of things to riff on with this topic. You're right. So one thing I want to bring up with this tweet is that I tagged Bitcoin Mechanic, who is the CTO, I believe, of Ocean Pool. And I said, if Ocean Pool won the block, what is your guys' sort of policy with this rare sat, given that they have taken the stance that rare sats don't exist, or any of these things don't exist? There is no epic sat. And he came back to me and said, whoever wins that block, or whoever is at the most amount of hash rate, I think, in that block will be given that sat, and they can do whatever they want with it. So Ocean Pool basically took like a neutral policy on it, where the sat will just be distributed to whoever mines that block within their pool, because they have like a little more ability to understand which miner within their pool mines a certain block. So that was one take on it. The other take was from Luke Dasher, who responded to me. Foundry isn't every miner. And the correct term for this is scamming. A lovely reply from Luke, who has blocked me, so I can't reply to him, but he is still jumping to my replies there. So I think there's a few things to watch with this. If Foundry gets it, we know it's going to happen. If Ant Pool gets it, it's unclear. Are they going to keep the money or distribute it? If it's another pool, will they distribute it? We're not quite sure. And then is there going to be reorgs in terms of people trying to get this block? Which is the last thing I want to bring up before I throw it over to Charlie. Charlie, I want to highlight an article you wrote on Blockspace about this, which is, quote, how the 2023 Ordinals to Gods might have predicted the halving block chaos. Definitely go check this out. We'll put it in today's show notes as well. This is talking about how last year there was an Ordinals project mint called to Gods, and it ended up causing probably a Bitcoin reorg. It's difficult to say if it did occur or not, but this can give you some indication if you're really into this topic about like what might actually happen with this Bitcoin block at the halving. Charlie?
Yeah, so when this airs, I will have done a live stream under Bitcoin Season 2, another Blockspace podcast with Parker Merritt of Coinmetrics, and we will be going over kind of the play-by-play, how these reorgs work, and doing some retroactive analysis on this particular DGods block back in May of 2023, March of 2023. What is interesting is when we compare like fee bursts on Bitcoin, we only really have one analogy that would compare to the halving, where there's a telegraphed block height where people are bidding to compete and get into that block. And so it creates a very interesting dynamic of bidding against each other. And then if this information is known, pools can identify this block height and perhaps employ strategic selfish mining techniques. Now, don't know if that's what happened. It was kind of suspicious and people were throwing out accusations at the time back in March 2023. But it's one of those things that if you look and you see and you look and you consider like the scale of the DGods fees, which were, you know, $500,000 at the time, and you consider that this block 840,000 or the ones after it could be an order or two magnitude more than that. That certainly places a bounty and creates a very clear incentive to try to capture those blocks, whatever means necessary. You're looking at whatever the base fee is, plus maybe this $5 million epic set. You're looking at, you know, maybe like a $20 million block. That's insane. So given how far it's been telegraphed, like this could be fireworks or it could be crickets. Both are equally interesting.
Could it be? It might just be an empty block. Honestly,
that would be the bet.
That'd be amazing.
That's the best prediction.
And here's another thing. Like,
yeah, explain what that means, though, to the audience that might not know what an empty block is, if you may.
Empty block is a block that doesn't actually process any transactions besides the Coinbase reward, right? Which is going to go to the mining pool. So specifically in this case, a mining pool might just try to extract that epic sat and be just first in line, right? And publish it as quick as possible. And like the reorg aspects that Charlie was talking about kind of play into that a bit. It also, what I was going to say is it kind of also brings up the idea that if you're a business, you may want to like increase your confirmation amount before you're accepting some transactions at this time period, because some of those transactions could be reorged. I don't know. It's very interesting. It's like if you're like just a geek and a researcher, it's like it's your Super Bowl. You just kind of like wait around and see what's going to happen.
Need ASIC help? Check out Bitamine, one of Bitmain's certified repair shops located in Washington State with satellite offices in Colorado, Oklahoma, and Texas. PSUs, hashboards, immersion setups, in and out of warranty repair, Bitamine has you covered. Want to train your technicians? Bring Bitamine to your site for hands-on training in the art of ASIC repair, complete with Bitmain AMTC certification. Contact Bitamine today at dan@vmasic.com. Again, that's dan@vmasic.com. When you think of ASIC repair, think Bitamine.
Kind of realize like the next topic isn't that far different from this one. So Charlie, I throw it over to you. Testnet reorgs. And this is for the Bitcoin testnet, which might be the first thing to explain, as a lot of people don't realize there is a Bitcoin testnet.
Yeah, so there's various testnets for Bitcoin. One is called Testnet. there's a SIGNET and a REG test. These are ways Bitcoin developers practice with fewer strings attached and fewer consequences how to use Bitcoin. What testnet Bitcoin uses a supposedly worthless token called testnet Bitcoin, TBTC. As we've seen in other ecosystems, testnet tokens tend to accrue value. This is a net negative. It's also really hard to prevent this. So because of ordinals and increased kind of script kiddie degens trying stuff out, testnet Bitcoin has started to accrue value in certain circles over the past year. So people have been deploying a lot of stuff on testnet lately, testing things out. And this is kind of creating a bit of a black market for TBTC. And notably, Jameson Lopp on the Bitcoin Dev mailing list is saying, this is happening. How do we stop this? There's some discussion on it, not really a clear like answer. So a day or two ago, if you're watching testnet, Bitcoin testnet, you may notice that a bunch of blocks, empty blocks, started hitting the testnet blockchain. What we might call this a block storm, all coming in really fast and not including any transactions. So a few people noticed this. I wondered if maybe it was an attempt to feather fork, a concept of trying to quietly, accidentally trick people into forking. Jameson Lopp replies to this, I left a calling card in the Coinbase. So let's go over.
That is so badass.
It's so badass. So let's go over. Let's look at just a random block. I forget. This is block 2587336 Coinbase. In the Coinbase output, mined by Lopp. If you look at this, there's hundreds of these. So Lopp has pointed real hash rate, I assume, real miners towards testnet to mine empty blocks so that people trying to use testnet for things that he doesn't and many developers don't like are crowded out. They can't get the transactions. And maybe he's like, you know, saying, okay, degens, let's see how interested you are. Maybe they'll lose interest and maybe just move back onto main chain or something, or use something reasonable like SIGNET. But in comes another notable Bitcoin miner, Hashbender, CEO of Luxor. Hashbender, a little bit after that, pointed some of his own hash rate towards testnet and started mining full blocks, including transactions, with the Coinbase output complements of Hashbender. So we're seeing some PvP on testnet. It's the mining pod. We got to talk about this. You got to love it. It's two very notable people, legends in the mining and Bitcoin ecosystem, competing on testnet.
In the block.
Duking it out. Someone tell Hashbender that we got to preserve testnet. Tell him we need to win him over so he also produces empty blocks.
Nick, then nature can heal.
Yeah, Nick.
Apparently,
Nick, come to the light side.
Nick just tweeted as well while we're recording this Thursday afternoon that there is now 1-2 block reorg tests on top of testnet right now, which indicates people are getting ready for perhaps the halving block or maybe they're giving off. I don't know.
It's a very interesting time to be looking at this stuff, man. You know, mining was boring maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It's fascinating now.
Yeah, there's a lot of people speed running, learning about feather forks, stale blocks, testnets right now. So if you have questions, feel free to hit us up. We are here to provide content for that. And also go check out Blockspace.media and Bitcoin Season 2, where we talk a lot about these ideas. Matt, any final thoughts as we close out here?
What's just so cool to me is that, like, 2011 Bitcoin topics are cool again.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the retro vintage clothing coming back, right? It's just all good fun. But it's like all these newcomers, right, not as much focused on the monetary side, but the software project side. Bitcoin is so multifaceted. It spans on so many topics. And like this mining stuff that's been happening is honestly, it's so intricate and detailed in what the project actually is. And so it's very cool to see people just kind of poking at it and seeing what will happen. particularly on testnet, right? Because that's what it's for.
I'm here for it. Okay, in terms of halving coverage going forward, Charlie, can you tell us a little bit about Bitcoin Season 2? You got some awesome shows coming up.
Yeah, probably about the time you see this mining pod, we'll also be co-releasing under Bitcoin Season 2. A great interview with Casey and Raph, one of the first public media appearances in a while for Casey in preparation for the halving. Bitcoin Season 2 has two episodes each week, one live stream on Thursday nights and a in-depth podcast with the new voices and new faces on new topics on Bitcoin. It sometimes leans a bit more technical, sometimes leans a bit more cultural, but Bitcoin Season 2 is about the new stuff and new era on Bitcoin. I'm excited to do that. So make sure you follow Blockspace Media and subscribe to all of the places where podcasts are listened to or broadcast.
Awesome. And then we'll also have the Denver Bitcoin halving party, the BitDevs party here. We'll be doing a live stream on our YouTube channel, on the Blockspace Media YouTube channel. There's an itinerary posted on the Mining Pod handle. We'll also put that itinerary for the event into the newsletter for tomorrow. So if you want to jump in and listen to any of those things, you can schedule some time. There's a lot of great conversations from like ASIC repairs to banking and Bitcoin, all the way to people just kind of giving like personal thoughts on like Bitcoin versus shitcoin and stuff like that. Last thing we'll throw out there is that Blockspace Media is hosting or co-hosting a Spaces with CoinDesk tomorrow, basically right when the halving is supposed to occur. So if you are interested in joining for that moment, be sure to go to Blockspace.media, just turn on notifications, and you will get a little notification when we go live on that. Okay, thank you for listening to the show. That's a wrap. Thank you to Damian Somerset for being the producer for the show. And also thank you to Nick Gates. If you want to learn more, reach out to us. hello@blockspace.media. Okay, Matt, Charlie, see you later.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.